Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
Today's episode of The Food Scene has been brought to you by Sam Edwards. For more information, SurreyFarms.com.
And welcome to The Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkel. Here today, smitten like most with Deb Perman of Smitten Kitchen. Thank you for being on.
Thanks for having me.
Excellent. Deb's actually been on the station before. 2 years ago, she was on Kathy Irway's Let's Eat In. And I actually was a guest during
that one.
Yeah. And for all these years, I've been thinking, oh, I already had Deb on my show. But really, we were just guests together.
I just thought it took us 2 years to schedule it.
Yeah, that too. Yeah, we've been busy. A lot of things have been happening.
A
book coming out this fall. Amongst life as well.
Yes, so. Life will hopefully be continuing this fall as well. But yes, there is a book coming out this fall.
Well, let's talk about life in general.
Yes.
The beginning. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Central Jersey.
Central Jersey. I have no comment about that. I don't know anything about it. I don't know what native cuisines happen in Central Jersey, if any.
Cuisines.
Yeah, the indigenous people.
Oh, I'm
going to
get in trouble if I don't. Yeah. Don't get me in trouble with my history lesson. No, I grew up in New Jersey, about like maybe an hour, 45-minute drive from the city, about 45 minutes from the beach. It seemed about right. I grew up not far from Rutgers University.
Yeah.
And my parents are still there, so I'm not going to talk smack about it.
Well, were you often in New York City?
Yeah. Both of my parents actually grew up in the city. My dad's from the Bronx, and my mom grew up in Queens.
Yeah.
And they lived in the Upper West Side when they first got married. They lived there for a few years, and then they lived in Lincoln Towers, which is sort of these famous buildings in the Upper West Side where people have been living for like 40 years. And then the Trump Towers went up and they blocked out their views. And my parents were so mad about this. But anyway, so then I would say that was the beginning of the end for them. And then eventually they decided that backyards and good public schools and all that stuff were their priorities. And
yeah.
So we ended up in New Jersey.
Well, I mean, New Jersey's not all that bad. I mean, it has its vicinity, its circumference to Manhattan, but
it has me.
Yeah, and it has you
me.
And home of Deb Perlman.
Yes, exactly.
What did you grow up eating, cooking?
Oh, God, such a good question. I was a pain in the butt. I didn't like anything. I was so picky. And then I made it worse because when I was 13, I became a vegetarian. Okay, maybe I wasn't the worst. My mother didn't cook at all when she first got married. And she kind of taught herself to cook a little bit through Julia Child's Mastering the Art of French Cooking,
yeah.
Which I think is really cool. And I definitely think it shaped my food orientation because, you know, we definitely had a lot of arugula salad growing up. My mom would steam artichokes. That was one of my favorite things. I don't remember eating like a lot of like the mac and cheese and hot dogs and stuff like that my friends ate, which is kind of a bummer because it sounds like they were having fun eating
yeah.
it. And we were like never allowed to have sugar cereals or anything like that.
So your friends were like mine, disappointed to come over and have dinner at your house?
I never even thought about it, but they probably were. But so when I didn't, you know, of course, it's just what you know. You don't think it's weird. I mean, I don't think we were like super foodie or fussy or anything like that. But when I talk to other people, I realize that there is sort of a gap. I don't think I ever had like meatloaf or... Which is a bummer because
yeah.
it's actually really delicious when it's made well.
So your mother's cooking was taught in her single years. When did you start cooking? Did you interact with your mother? Did you start cooking when you were on your own?
I mean, I definitely played around in the kitchen growing up, but it was not like, I mean, I always loved cooking. My best friend and I would make these like crazy cakes and we would, you know, those rainbow cakes you see all over Pinterest these days. Yeah, we totally did that. We totally did that way before it was on Pinterest or even Pinteresty. So we would make these crazy cakes and I was definitely into cooking, but you know, I kind of, you know, grew up, went to high school, went to college, you know, living on my own. There wasn't really a lot of reason to cook. I mean, I think I might have enjoyed doing it more if I was still at home, but there wasn't like, you know, cooking for one in a dorm room. That doesn't even like make sense. And then you're living on your own.
You never experimented with the micro fridge?
Nope.
Late night?
No.
Nothing like that?
I don't. I remember we once made noodles in like a tea kettle. I mean, it was pretty, it was really bad. Ramen.
Yeah.
I remember ramen. So it wasn't until, so I was always interested in cooking, but I didn't really start until a bit later. And so when somebody comes to me and they're like, I never cook, you know, I live on my own. I'm like, don't feel bad. I think it's, you know, it's great if you can make time to do it, but I think I completely understand the desire to not, you know, go shopping, haul all these groceries home, do all the cooking, do all the dishes, have leftovers for 4 days just to like eat by yourself or maybe with one friend you dragged over. You know, it's not, but I think once I met my husband and we were living together and it became a lot more fun, you know, you kind of don't want to go out every night or certainly don't want to order in every night. And so it sort of gives you a fun chance to experiment because they help with the dishes or they should. You should definitely.
Or you just get a dishwasher.
Yeah, but somebody still needs to load it.
Yeah. I know. If you load it and let it sit for a couple days without running it, now that's
disgusting.
A smell. That's an amazing smell.
No idea what you're speaking of. We are top-notch cleaners at Smitten Kitchen.
So your formal education, your schooling wasn't in the food path. What did you actually do prior to arriving at Smitten Kitchen?
Oh, God. What did I not do? Let's see. I worked at a coffee shop. I worked at my radio station. I worked at a record store. I worked at Tower Records for a bunch of years. I was
awesome.
A supervisor there. I was pretty cool. Kind of. Let's see. I was an art therapist. I was an IT reporter. I mean, I could just keep going.
Keep on going. Yeah, I'm trying to
scroll. I've had a lot of different things that I've done that seem like I worked at a coffee shop for a while. I would like make these triple skim decaf lattes with a sugar-free hazelnut syrup. We called them hand warmers because, you know, why would you... What? I don't understand.
But you were also, as you put it, a scrawler of happy birthday on cake.
Yes.
What was that? What kind of job was that?
When I was in high school, I worked at a bakery, just like in a chain mall because it was Central Jersey. And I worked at a bakery, but I learned so much there. There were bakers and I was a counter person and, you know, like never between the two should meet. But, you know, the bakers go home and somebody needs to cover like the last minute birthday cake orders and stuff like that. And so we were allowed to like occasionally like write on cakes and stuff. I was so good at that.
Yeah. You didn't do those cookie cakes, did you?
No. Yeah. This is like before every bakery like airbrushed and stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, they were just getting into that. It was really like basic yellow cakes, German chocolate cake, you know, the pies, the woven, you could get a crumb pie or a lidded pie. Like there was only two kinds of pie.
Yeah.
And, you know, the cookies that are filled and dipped, all those Italian cookies that are rolled in the sprinkles, those were super fun to make when I got to do those days. So I worked there for a few years and it was fun. I learned a lot. And they also baked all their own bread on the premise. So I learned a little bit about that, mostly just by eavesdropping.
Yeah. So you had this basis, this foundation. Did you realize what you were learning while you were there?
No.
Yeah.
No, it is not to the 18-year-old have insight into what they're doing with their lives. Or certainly not this one. And I admire 18-year-olds who know what they want to do. But no, I just thought it was really cool and I thought cooking was really fun. But I really thought if you wanted to cook, you had to become a cook. You had to go to cooking school and then you had to work at restaurants. And that didn't sound like the right thing for me.
Yeah.
You know, I remember there was this 10-second debate with my mother before I, you know, chose my undergraduate school about, you know, whether I should go to cooking school. But it was just like, I don't know. It didn't sound very appealing to me. I didn't imagine that you'd have like much of a life, which, you know, is indeed true. And you'd be working all the time. And
You don't work at all now. You're just here at Roberta's.
It's 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Yeah. I'm hanging out at Roberta's. What else do
I'm
I have?
Having a beer.
Nothing else to do with my time. Exactly. Maybe after. Okay, maybe I'll just steal your... Right outside my window, people are eating these calzones, and they are filled with, like,
you
meat and cheese.
They ate those things. They cleared those plates.
They really did. I don't think I've ever seen anybody finish a Roberta's calzone before, so they've got meat.
I don't know why they wore white shirts either.
And I want their lives.
Yeah. You have a good life.
It's not terrible.
When did you realize you were becoming a self-taught cook? What was that first dish? What was that first moment where you're like, hey, I want to pursue this. I want to keep cooking.
It definitely happened in the early days of the blog, of the food blog. Before that, I had sort of a personal blog where I'd babble on the way I'm doing right now. but I had that for a couple years, and then I started the food blog, and I really thought it was going to be a six-month endeavor because I felt like the good food blogs were written by people who really knew something about food. They were cooks, they were chefs, they were farmers, like they had something to say, and I was not any of those things. So I didn't think it would last long, but as it happened, I realized I had quite a few opinions on food and how I wanted it made. And I think it stems from that fussiness, that pickiness, yeah. where I was like, no, I want it to be this way, not that way. And from there, you can create a voice, even if it's a little bit bratty.
Yeah. Do you remember some of the OG, some of like the original food blogs?
I mean, I remember Chow Hound was, we yeah. were just talking about Chow Hound before this. It was very big. And there was, oh, what's the other really big? There was another really big
Mouthfuls?
Food. No, it's I'm going to get in trouble because I think some techie people started and I knew
them. Yeah.
So there was another, you know, so I knew about those. And I mean, when I started, in terms of like the personal home cooking type of food blogging, I mean.
E-Gullet.
Thank you. God, I was going to get yeah. in so much trouble.
No, I saw a whole bunch of techies waving their fists at us outside.
I was going to get in trouble. So, so E-Gullet was a big one. And so I definitely knew about the forums. But you didn't have, I mean, it wasn't like yet every. Like New York Mag didn't have Grub Street yet, and you know New York Times didn't have Diner's Journal yet. You know, you didn't have blogs that went with magazines that focused on food, but there were definitely a few. I mean, there are definitely a lot of food bloggers that I still read now. We were just speaking about Heidi from 101 yeah. Cookbooks. She's been around longer than me.
And if you're listening, Heidi, I'm going to get you on this show. So that is a threat.
I don't know anything about Heidi's travel yeah. schedules. I'm not going to get myself in trouble. Yeah, I absolutely remember it. And I mean, Chow Hound's so different today, but I still, when I'm looking, like if I'm about to go out of town and I want to find out how a restaurant's doing, like I'll totally search yeah. Chow Hound for it still.
So what were those first dishes that you cooked and commented on your own blog?
Oh boy. So definitely some of the, oh God, why? This shouldn't be that difficult. I definitely remember making this eggplant dish from Food & Wine. And I remember that I had all of these opinions about it. It was a smoky Thai eggplant salad. It's one of the first dishes I put up. But I was afraid. Like, I thought that it was rude to change the recipe. I thought that this chef knew what they were doing.
Yeah.
And they did. I mean, you know, but it's okay to also have your own opinions. And so I remember in the beginning being very tentative about putting my own mark on dishes because I thought that it was rude or disrespectful or like, what do I know? I'm not a chef.
Yeah.
I'm not a food writer. And as definitely the big change has been over the last 5 to 6 years is that slowly I started changing things a little bit. Then I started changing things a lot. And now I've kind of gotten to the point where over half the things I make, I'm just not seeing out there. So I have to start from scratch. So
yeah.
I've definitely built a lot of my cooking skills over the course of the site.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's also a trusted thing that you're taking a recipe from someone who has taken time, effort to make something that is replicable and consistent. And then, yeah, there are flavor profiles. Each person likes.
And then I go into my tiny little kitchen.
Yeah.
And, like, they probably have a real kitchen with a full-size oven and maybe a microwave and, like, I don't know, you know, like, pots that aren't junky. And, like, so who am I in my kitchen to say that's wrong? But that's the whole thing. Like, food, I don't think the cooking came from people who wrote recipes professionally. It came from, like, people who passed recipes around with their own marks in the margins. So, you know, that deserves some credit, too.
And it's cooked in, what, 42 square feet? How big is your kitchen
now? It's actually
now?
A lot smaller now. I don't even, it's like 20, it's really small. It's like it would be hard for three people to stand in the kitchen.
Yeah.
It's not enjoyable.
What are its quirks?
It has a big window. Well, it's not a big window. It's that the room is small and it's a normal size window, but it has a window and that's a huge help. I look out over the avenue. I definitely feel a little less isolated in it. It has, you can't stand in front of the stove. If you look at my site, like most of the stove pictures are either directly overhead or they're from the corner because the fridge is too big for the kitchen. And I think that people who've rented the apartment before me put the fridge in the living room, but I just can't do it. I can't bear it, even though it would give me all this extra space, like whole feet of it.
Yeah.
So you can't really, I mean, you can stand in front of the stove, but it's not enjoyable.
Yeah, but I mean, we'll talk about photography later.
Yeah.
But I mean, the angles that you have to work with too are limited, but what you've done with that is, you know, your point of view. So perfectly put, so concise and conflated that, you know, it makes sense in any kitchen, large or small, but it shows that you can actually do it in 42 squared feet.
I definitely think people shouldn't feel limited by small kitchens.
Yeah.
I mean, think about restaurants though. I mean, with each line cook, they don't have multiple counters. They have one little spot. They chop something, they put in a dish, clean their counter, chop something else, and you have to do all that prep work. So, I mean, people have been cooking amazing things in tiny kitchens a long time before Smitten Kitchen came along. And so I think you definitely don't need to be intimidated by it. There are definitely times where it's frustrating, where you would just, like, uphill for another counter to put your two baking sheets on, but you know, you just work it out.
Oh, believe me, I've been thinking about making Murphy counters lately.
That would pull out?
Yeah, just fold out like an ironing board.
I've totally fantasized about that. Right now, I just like put things out on like the table in the living room, but yeah, I mean, I've got a toddler around and it's just,
yeah,
it's not good.
What was the start of Smitten Kitchen? What year? What was the impetus? What was the first entry?
So I did have this personal blog before then. It was called Smitten. But I was just writing about whatever. But it was like more and more the posts were becoming about food. I'm trying not to comment on what these poor people are eating.
Oh, they're
having a great time.
Sticky buns now? Carbo load.
I am so jealous.
You know what Roberta should do is like rent beds and back for naps. After seeing them eat that, like those Japanese pods that they have at the airports. Not that I've ever been, but I've seen them in movies.
I have seen them too. Yeah. They look pretty awesome. They look bigger than my kitchen.
New conceptual restaurant. New pop-up restaurant is the, you know, nap time snack.
That's like stuff for thisiswhyyourefat.com.
Yeah.
So anyway, the posts were becoming more and more about food. So I said, let me start a food blog. But as I mentioned earlier, I had all these concerns about like not being a real food person. I still do.
Yeah.
Well, maybe a little less. But I mean, you know, I didn't really think it was going to last long, but I thought I'd just give it a spin and see what happened.
Yeah. And that started when?
That was September 2006. I kind of was building the site over the summer before, but like August, September 2006. So we're going on 6 years.
Wow.
Which is insane because I just blinked.
Yeah. And I was saying restaurants don't even last that long these days.
That's insane.
Yeah.
It's so crazy. I can't even, it's like it happens so fast.
So what was it based on? Unfussy ingredients, fearlessness, or fear?
Well, the fears were more like personal confidence fears that I think we all have. But I think definitely I wanted people to be unafraid in the kitchen. That was definitely something. And I didn't have that all figured out from the first week. That was just something that I realized was a recurring theme. You know, I had to think about it. Like, you know, what's going on here? Like, what am I trying to tell people? And it was that if you want to make something, like, why not make it? Like, what... Excuse me. What's stopping you from like learning to make buttercream or pizza dough? Or like, why not? Like, what is there to lose? Even if it's like an average home cooked meal, it's probably 10 times as good as what you were going to make from a box or from the freezer. So,
and I mean, truthfully, how expensive or time consuming would it be if you fucked up?
It really wouldn't be at all. And I'm telling you that even bad pizza I've made, we have enjoyed. Like, it's still pizza.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
I mean, there's got to be dishes though, that when you make them poorly, you push them aside and you just start another day.
Well, see, for me, it's different because my husband and son will eat them, but I will be so annoyed with the dish. Like, I'll be mad. I can't even look at you. Like,
oh, yeah. No, I get angry.
Yeah, I get so mad. I'm like frustrated. And especially if I haven't figured out what went wrong yet, like, I get frustrated because, like, so I look at it and I don't want to eat it. Even though it may not be that bad, it's not what I want it to be. It's not a good trait. I just.
Yeah,
my husband teases me. He's like, you can't even look at that dish, can you?
Yeah. So what are your bane ingredients? What are the ones that I know? Okra is like, I can't stand okra.
Okay. You need to go. See, I actually am not a big fan of okra either, but great. Now I'm going to get sent like a million okra recipes. So I'm not crazy about okra, but I have had formats of okra that I think are phenomenal. You need to go to Chinese Merch.
I'm writing this down. I'm just going to listen to the show later.
It's a 28th or 29th and like Lexington. I think it's right across the street from Colusians, or maybe it's on 3rd Avenue.
Yeah.
It's right there. And it's like, it's literally fusion, Chinese, Indian. Anyway, they make crispy fried okra. You get it like in a basket, like with cones, and it's so spicy and it is crunchy and it is addictive. And it made me an okra person, at least while I'm at that place.
Yeah. You know, sometimes you give up the battle and you just let someone else cook okra for you.
Yeah, I think that's totally legit. Yeah. I actually like to challenge myself to find, like, when I don't like a food, find a way that I would enjoy it, such as this one okra at this one location in Manhattan.
Yeah.
So you want me to talk about other food that...
Well, what are your foods? You can join the okra bandwagon if you like.
I am not the biggest fan of beets. But I have found ways to overcome it. I actually have a beet dish in the cookbook. My mother's like, oh my God, she couldn't believe it. Like, fall over. It almost ended up on the cover. So, which is because they're really pretty. But they were small and crackly roasted. And I think that kind of transforms their texture.
Beetiness.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, I always love beets, except for that first time where I ate too much. And the next day I thought I had to go to the hospital. So that's another story.
Yeah. So I was, and for a long time I wasn't that into kale. So I basically every trendy ingredient.
Yeah.
I wasn't that into kale, and I couldn't really find its charm. But then I challenged myself to, and now I love it. I actually think it's awesome on pizza.
Yeah.
So
I actually had that 2 nights ago.
I actually don't eat a lot of fish.
Yeah.
Fish is definitely my thing. It's not been my cod and salmon. Yeah. And
I could see this as a series of Smitten Kitchen attacks fish. I don't mean like physically attacks, but like
that'd be kind of cool.
So there are also fussy ingredients that you tried to stray away from. You cited, you know, like truffle oil, Himalayan pink salt, single origin chocolates.
I just think that like cooking shouldn't be about like what you can spend on ingredients. It's supposed to be about making food for your family. Like, it should be accessible. I really try to write recipes that are, I mean, I'm really spoiled. I live in New York City. I have the ability to go to a green market. I can buy local meat. I buy local produce. But I try to write recipes that you can go to your regular old grocery store and make, because I don't think people should have to feel bad because they can't get the fanciest produce, or maybe because, you know what, like those tomatoes at the green market are pretty steep.
Yeah.
Like, they're really steep, and it's, you know, it's cost prohibitive for a lot of people. You have a family of five, you're going to just go, like, this is, I mean, so I don't think food should be a class thing. So I try to write recipes. To me, like, a good recipe transforms food. It takes it from one state and it makes it in another, you know, or it does something to raise what's inherent even in an average ingredient. And so that's really what I want to focus on. And if it only is going to taste good with a very, very, very peak season, picked yesterday, you know, like dewy fresh produce, I either will mention it or maybe I'll just reconsider whether I want to put it on my site. Not that I won't enjoy it at home, but I don't know if it's what I want to push on other people.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, we're going to take a quick break and come back and talk about those transformative foods year-round found more than locally. Interesting. You've been listening to The Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.com.
This program is brought to you by Edwards of Surrey, Virginia.
The following program was sponsored by S. Wallace Edwards and Sons. Summertime is not the only time when barbecue is welcome. At S. Wallace Edwards & Sons, Sam Edwards has been working his magic on ribs, briskets, pit-cooked pulled pork, and much, much more. Add a few of their sides and the party is complete. Entertaining has never been so easy. To order, go to virginiatraditions.com.
Hey, and welcome back to The Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turkel, here with Smitten Kitchen, a.k.a. The Smitten, a.k.a. Deb Perlman. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so we're gawking all the food and stuff going on outside and just getting hungrier and hungrier. But we're not going to rush through this. We're gonna talk about the slow and low. We're going to talk about those foods, those transformative foods that, you know, went from a simple carrot to the carrot cake pancakes.
Wow.
That recipe looks fantastic.
It's really fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's great. And, like, it's just, I don't know, when I have to, it's from the Joy the Baker cookbook, and I was, she's a food blogger she's got a great little blog, and this is her first cookbook, and I picked it up, and I was just kind of like waiting for something to jump out at me. Not that everything doesn't, but, you know, these did.
Yeah.
It just was kind of like carrot cake pancakes. Like, that's such a good idea because they're not terribly sweet. And you make this cream cheese topping and it sounds like it would be so fattening, but it's actually almost austere. There's so much grated carrot in there. My son inhaled them, which was like, yes.
Yeah.
So that was a good one. There's another carrot recipe on the site that I'm tremendously fond of, and it was sent to me by a reader, and is it was Moroccan spiced carrot salad, and has all these spices in it, and feta, and mint, and it's just it's so good.
Yeah.
It's like you could just, it's like such a wonderful thing to have around. So it's a little bit of harissa in it too.
Excellent.
And yeah, it's, and there you go. Like, I mean, you could use great carrots and you could use, and it's not that great carrots aren't going to maybe taste a little sweeter, a little fresher, but I think it's really nice to know that you can go use your grocery store carrots and make a really good salad with them.
Yeah, I mean, that, there's a fail-safe. I think all great recipes are ones that have a lot of latitude.
Mm-hmm.
Are exacting at the same time, but that, depending on what ingredient you get in, you can still make it and it still produce something wonderful.
Yeah, I just don't think people should feel bad if they, you know, like, find prices or if they live in an area. I mean, I think it would be wonderful if everybody had access to local, clean produce that was affordable, but it's not the reality. So
yeah, when you first started your blog and cooking for your family, where did you shop? Did you go to the Union Square Green Market? Because you live in East Village, right?
Yeah, I didn't live there the whole time. We lived in Chelsea for a while, and I mean, we rent, so we just kind of bounce around whoever will have us. Do you have a kitchen with a window? Okay, no, next apartment. That's pretty much actually it. So I did use the Green Market, and I use, you know, this is a tough one because I use Whole Foods a lot. But outside the city, people are like, oh, I can't shop at a fancy place like Whole Foods. And I'm like, that's cool. It's just that where we are, that's the good store.
Yeah.
Like, this is like where I live in the East Village. I'm equidistant from two Whole Foods. And they really are the stores that have like the most of the ingredients I use. I also go to, you know, Key Food sometimes too for basic stuff. But, you know, these are the great. And when I lived in Chelsea, I use the Gristiti's all the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. I need pasta. They've got it. Same brand.
Yeah.
So I would use whatever's close. But, you know, so I know that outside the city, like, you know, Whole Foods is sort of viewed as like a fancy store. And I think it is. It is. I mean, you know, if you want to buy prepared food there, it's really expensive. But I find for the basics, like, they're pretty solid. And I can get my ingredients that I need there.
Yeah. I feel the same way about Trader Joe's. I think there's guys about it. But, you know, some of the produce from California, when California produce is in season, mm-hmm. we're not. I'll go there. I'll sneak away, have an avocado or two, or, you know, pull in some tomatoes or citrus, because we don't grow it here. And
no, we don't grow citrus.
Yeah.
I know. And we also, like, I know it's really wonderful to eat local, but there is a reality in New York City, in New York, in the East Coast, like, where we're really not growing stuff from October to just now things are coming in. So, you know, it's really wonderful to use all the roots and everything that can survive the winter, but the reality is eventually you start to crave strawberries from time to time.
Yeah.
And I think you should buy them from the guys on the street, because I love those street vendors.
Yeah.
The street carts of the fruit, they're like so nice.
Yeah.
So
it's just so refreshing to hear that there are, I almost called them alternative sources, like street vendors and stuff. But no, they were there propagating before in the Square Green Market and Whole Foods, and that you can still make great food out of, you know, this produce or mm-hmm. this product. When you cook for your family, how do you concept a meal or concept a recipe? Or is it a day like, I'm gonna work on, you know, transforming this to that? Or like, no, I'm going to work on getting these guys fed.
It's like, I'm hungry.
Yeah.
So I want to make this, and they can eat if they want it. And if they want to stare at their plates, they can stare at their plates.
Yeah.
Mean. Especially when I'm hungry, I'm mean. Now, sometimes it's a dish that's sort of been vexing me. Like I wrote over the weekend about this towering quiche that I've been wanting to sort of crack the code of for years. It's from Thomas Keller. So that was definitely something that we ate for a couple of days.
The over the top mushroom.
Two thirds of us ate for a couple of days.
Yeah.
I'm not going to out the members of my family who wouldn't touch it, but that's a different story.
Yeah.
They were short. So sometimes it's something like that, and I am sort of thinking about dinner. Other times I'm sort of like working on something else, and it may be part of dinner, or it may be all of dinner, or it may just be like something that I have around for lunch for a few days, like if it's a salad. And I make a lot of pizza at home. I've been on this big pizza kick lately.
Yeah.
That's my one of my throw together meals. Like, I really, you know, we do some pasta at home. I do like try to make, I do this a bit more in the winter, where I make like a big batch of like a bolognese, and, you know, maybe freeze it in smaller portions. And that's like a really great thing to heat up. It's sort of a win-win with the toddler. Like, he loves anything with noodles and a tomatoey meaty sauce.
Yeah.
So I do stuff like that, but it's really all over the place. Like, I know most families, like, they have certain things that they eat every week. And I think for us, it's much more random.
Yeah.
Whatever mom felt like cooking today, if she felt like cooking.
So who is this book for? And again, congratulations on this book. I know what putting these things together is, and we've talked a couple times, like, oh god, I am buried.
I'm buried.
Yeah. But when it comes out, it's not that I ever have, but it's like birthing a child. It almost
you
takes that long.
You've done many books.
Yeah.
Do you not under, you've done many. You've done photography for a lot of books. I've not done any books. So this is going to be interesting. But yeah, right now we're still in the work phase.
Yeah.
I've been doing the first pass this week, and I just got that back to them today. Only 2 days late.
Yeah.
Everything I do is late. The cookbook, I hope it's a little bit for everybody. I mean, I definitely think my dream, my hope for the cookbook was I wanted somebody to be able to walk in a bookstore, a cookbook store, and pick it up and like not know anything about the site and not care what a food blog is and open it up and see something that they like absolutely want to make. That's what I thought about all the time. When I looked at a recipe and I was trying to decide if it was still a good fit, I tried to like have it pass that test. Like, what would I have to take home from the grocery store and from the bookstore? So that's what I was thinking about a lot. And I mean, I hope, of course, what my foods would, you know, the dishes for me are not necessarily going to be everybody's, but I hope that there's at least one or two things in there that most people find irresistible. And so
What are your standouts? What do you feel like are going to be the signature dishes from this book?
Oh god, I mean, I have my favorites, but I have no idea. There's a pretty cool French toast casserole. There's a pretty cool breakfast pretzel. I had a lot of fun with the
breakfast pretzel.
Yeah, breakfast pretzel.
Tell me a little bit more about that.
It's a, it's like actually a brioche. It's a sweet one. It's not like you're not going to have this in a, you're not going to have this at Oktoberfest in Germany. Like, it's brioche. There's some chocolate in there and it looks like a pretzel and it's just, it's not, it's really a pretzel in design. And
don't
not,
downplay it. It's a pretzel. It's, I love pretzels.
It's got, it's a little salty and crunchy and, so there's one of those. So I definitely had a lot of fun with the breakfast section. I also had, I really played around. I'm not like the hugest meat cooker, but I do, I have very strong feelings about how I want it to be. So I just tried to work from that angle. And there's a chicken dish that there's three chicken dishes in there actually, which is like a tremendous lot for me. But I had fun. I just had these three different things I wanted to do. One's more of a mostly whole roasted bird, one's in pieces, and one's something that you can do with chicken cutlets. And I think that all three of them are like really great. But the one that's in pieces, it's got some unusual ingredients, and every time we make it, we just completely finish it, and I think that's awesome.
I'm excited. And yeah. I like these little cliffhangers, too, that you're not telling me the whole story.
I know. What is wrong with me? Why can't I talk about these?
No, it's better for the book. Keep the mystique.
I'm just like, it's like this on my site, too. Like, it's so hard for me to even talk about what I want to do next week, because, I don't know, I might change my mind, which drives my publishers crazy, because the act that I would sit there and act like maybe this isn't a permanent decision I made. So there's some cool chicken dishes in there. There is cool chicken dishes. That sounds impossible.
like tepid, like
yeah, I know.
Room temp, cool.
No,
just in the breeze.
I mean, it is by the time I get on the table. But there's a whole bunch of salads. There's and there's a lot of desserts. You know, on the site, desserts are a good third to half of the site. So we try to keep it. It's not maybe it's probably a good third of the book. And so there's some cakes, birthday cakes for grownups, birthday cakes for kids. There's some few pies. And fruit desserts, and then there are some cookies.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to think of a really... There's definitely a great junk food cookie in there, and there is definitely a great peanut butter cookie in there with some chocolate, because, you know, obviously that has to happen. And then I did this whole thing at the end that I think might be a little weird, but I just really wanted to do it. And it's like party foods, because I love, like, if I'm having people over or going somewhere, to kind of make sort of like a cocktail party snack that's not just toast and fancy cheese or like little baguette slices. So I did a few things that are like party snacks that I, you know, you can either take with you or make when you're having people over.
It's just not like just all at, it's travel.
Yeah.
You can
and
travel
it could be snacks for at home too. But like, you know, that's sort of like a part of my cooking, so I wanted to include that. And I think, you know, when you're going to a party and you like to cook, it's nice to not just bring a bottle of wine or like a wedge of cheese, but to bring something that you made. So there's a section of that.
So pros in photography, because your site isn't just all recipes, but your pros, I mean, it really is whimsical and it's insightful, but it's hilarious, and it is exactly this tone that we're talking in.
Mean me talking too much?
no, it's that it's true, that it's honest, and it's exactly what you're thinking at the time, like no bullshit.
God,
so yeah. And the photography too, it has a clarity to it. It has a understanding. Well, it has what eventually becomes an understanding, because you see yourself work through problems or work mm-hmm. through recipes mm-hmm. that, you know, it's not just a site where it's one pretty picture of a dish. It's step by step by step, figuring it out mm-hmm. along the way. And, you know, I don't see that done that often. And it's a real, you know, coup de you to Thanks. Actually have.
You know, the process pictures, they play the part of, I think, making you feel like somebody's in the kitchen with you. Like, it really helps me when I'm chopping vegetables to sort of have an image of, like, better than any words can describe how to chop vegetables is to see somebody dicing an onion. At the same time, I don't do the, like, I know there are some sites that they really evident, like, they have a photo of every step, and I don't do that at all. I don't pressure myself too. Sometimes I take two process photos, and that's it. The photos themselves are, so, theoretically, I'm taking them to help explain the recipe, but I'm actually taking them because I find the food pretty. It's often just like an angle or something I think yeah. looks cool, like all the coins of carrots on a plate. Like I take them because I like the textures and the shapes. So those are the things that jump out. So they serve a function, but I actually take them because I think they're, most of the time, they're pretty.
Yeah. Well, they come across that way. And on top of that, you know,
it's fun for me.
Yeah. And it shows. And it's done on your countertop. It's in your real kitchen. It's not like a studio setup.
People are going to be mad if I move out of that kitchen and I have like a non-hideous countertop.
No, that's a... No. What is it for, Mica? What is it?
Yeah, it's like total for Mica. Yeah. Like occasionally I'll get an email. They're like, I redecorated my kitchen. I want a granite countertop. I'm like, it's not granite. They're like, well, what do you think of granite? I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's plastic. It's like peeling at the corner.
Yeah, yeah. But that's what makes it so charming. That's what makes this food so real.
I think bokeh is what makes it charming.
Yeah. So in the photography, you're self-taught as well.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah. Oh, you know what you're
I
doing.
Know what like yeah. three buttons do.
Yeah.
But like I could never have a conversation with real photographers about
yeah.
real photography.
Me neither, really. That's why I do this.
No, but I really think that the difference between what I do, which is sort of like playing a photographer on the internet, and like real photographers, is that real photographers know how to make a photo happen. I just sort of grab photos that look good to me. But if you told me to, like, you know, take a cookbook worthy shot of this like cup on the table, I can't promise it's going to happen.
Yeah.
Like, you know, so it's like that ability to execute is where I think all that extra technical knowledge comes out. I'm mostly just trying to get the sharpest, clearest picture I can of the food in front of me.
I think it's very much in line with how you taught yourself food, though. So you work on that technique stuff first, and then you're able to build a repertoire enough that you can execute at the end.
I hope so.
Yeah, I have no doubt. Mise en place to mise en scene, you know?
I don't know. For some reason, I know for a lot of people, like the photography is sort of the biggest part of it. For me, it's like kind of the smallest part. I know it's a big part of what people see, but I guess it's the thing of the between the writing and the cooking and the stuff. Like it's probably like it's number three on the list yeah. for me. Like it's the.
I'm actually kind of glad that you said that. I think people think photography is a very easy job sometimes, but there's a lot that goes into it and forethought.
So much.
And you know, I help do recipe concept and consulting, uh-huh. testing, but part of photography is also inherently understanding the recipe mm-hmm. and what looks pretty and what step you should show. So it's not just taking.
Yeah, I know nothing yeah. about styling food. I'm so amazed when people can just like take a table and like make it look inviting because they know how to like throw the napkin down yeah. and like I mean if my food's like really unstyled I'm like yeah I don't style food, it's all natural. I also don't know how to style food, so there's that too.
Yeah. Let's talk about food aside from your own, because I found this little gem on your site about Deb's New York. Recently updated
it's really,
too.
Only yeah, I put something up a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
There was like a year where I hadn't updated.
Oh, really?
Because I forgot about.
Well,
it.
Well, how felicitous! This is kind of perfect that we get to talk about talking pizza, talking seasonal recipe ingredients. Ramp Pizza at Motorino around the corner from your house.
I don't know. I need to call. I haven't called them this week to find out if it's back yet. But it was a revelation for me last year. I thought it was one. I just loved it. I don't do a lot of ramps on the site. I love them, but they fall into that thing that you really need to be by a green market in a very specific week of the year in a very specific part of like the East Coast, and so they're not really something that most people have access to, but they have this ramp pizza that I just thought was amazing. There's no mozzarella on it. It was a thin red sauce, and then I don't know if they lightly grilled them or they just roasted them, maybe they lightly sauteed them, those all over, and then just a ton of pecorino romano, so it's like salty and punchy and bright, and it was just so good. And then it was gone.
I kind of like
so
zoned
sad.
Out for a sec, just imagining that. Yes.
It was just this tangle, and it was really good.
Yeah.
And I was a big fan.
Well, I mean, you preface in your about section in your bio that you like bourbon, artichokes, things that taste like burnt sugar and baked goods with funny names. Artichokes. You name that twice in your New York. St. Anselm has a artichoke for two?
I had the steak for two there.
Steak for two.
Well, I did not personally eat the entire steak for two. Yeah. That would be something else. No, they have an amazing artichoke dick. I don't know if it's permanently on their menu. Probably not. We were there maybe a month or two ago. We had such a wonderful meal, and it was they were small artichokes. It was just the hearts, and they were grilled. And in the sort of scooped out heart where the choke would be, they put a little dollop of this lemony, garlicky aioli, and it was magnificent. It was excellent. Yeah. I would go back. And I think it was, I don't remember what it cost, but I just felt like it was pretty reasonable for what the dish it was. I felt everything there was, I mean, coming from like, it's not a steakhouse, I know, but
yeah,
you know, coming from like Manhattan prices and like what you pay for a lot of restaurants, I felt like everything there was very reasonable and awesome. Fair for what you were getting.
Happy Pesach. Kutcher's matzo ball soup.
Dude, it's really good.
Yeah.
It's really good. It's changed a little bit since I've been there maybe three times and I've had it. The first time it came out, I thought it was like the most gorgeous bowl of matzo ball soup I'd ever seen in my entire life. There was in the bowl like just perfectly diced confetti of carrots, celery. Everything was perfectly cubed, even the celery, which if you've ever chopped celery, yeah. It's not easy to make it in perfect cubes. And parsnip. And I almost feel like there was something pink in there too. And it was just like this confetti over the soup. And it was gorgeous. Yeah. Little sprigs of dill, and it was excellent. I don't know if they're still doing this because I'm not a restaurant expert.
Got a couple more days for Passover.
Yeah. well you can go there and get it this week. That would be wonderful. But they had for a while there, I don't know if they're still doing, they had this Jewish Chinese Sunday night dinner that was so cool. We actually stumbled into it randomly when we just like stopped by just to see what was going on, and they took the same matzo ball soup and they drizzled it with toasted sesame oil, sesame seeds, scallions, and there was a little shredded duck on the side, and that was the second best matzo ball soup I've ever had in my entire life.
It's Bubby is first.
Maybe. I don't.
Yeah,
I don't actually think that either my Bubby's cooked.
Well, I don't want to make fun of Bubby's here because I hold mine dearly. But I just wanted to end the show with a couple things. Cookbook, congrats.
Thank you.
Fall this year.
Yeah, it should be out in October. The exact date is not confirmed. Yeah. But yeah, we've got.
Baked goods with funny names. You name your favorite, I'll name mine, and we'll be out.
Grunt, Fool, Pandowdy.
Oh, wow. Mine were much more pervy than that.
What?
Nun's Farts and Spotted Dick.
Oh, yeah. What's the Nun's Fart?
Nun's Farts are like beignets.
Really?
Yeah.
Why would you do that to a beignet?
I don't know. But they're great. We'll leave it at that. Smitten Kitchen, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks for having me on.
You've been listening to The Food Scene on HeritageRadioNetwork.com. I'm your host, Michael Harlan Turco. Hoping to have you back here next Tuesday at 3. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.